So this is Lisa Jarman catching up with ex-Skill Cymru and BBC World apprentice, Eva Runciman. Hi, Eva.
Hi, Lisa. How are we doing?
I'm very good. How are you? A long time no see.
Definitely a long time no see. A lot has changed and it's so nice to be reminded of where I came from, being brought back down to earth.
Because I think the last time we saw each other was right in the middle of COVID. Mm. And you basically, we couldn't see each other, and I was assessing with you and we were assessing over Zoom, and you used to do your units and stuff all over Zoom, and you just managed to sort of edit and mix stuff, and it was just amazing what you accomplished over Zoom, when really Zoom was just like a brand new thing really to us at that time, wasn't it?
It was so weird. And I actually remember doing one of my end of unit assessments in a show home where my mum was working in, because she used to work show homes and I could only use the Wi-Fi in there one day. And so went in and there was like people being shown around a house while I was trying to like speak to you and get assessed on how to put a running order together for a live broadcast. And oh, so, yeah, we did a lot over Zoom. God, this is even weird having a Zoom call now because I've not done one in ages now.
So I want to take you back to the start, because I've got to be honest that you were a very young apprentice coming to Wales. So tell me a little bit about your journey, about how you actually got to Wales. Where were you living and what were you doing?
Well, I had basically quit school early and left school basically at the Christmas time rather than seeing it all the way through to the June, because I was bored and everyone was fighting and I was really sick of doing exams. And then I was just kind of working as a waitress and doing a few like ad hoc media courses that were free. And I had met previously in some volunteering at festivals, a handful of the BBC Scotland production apprenticeships. The guys on there, so they're apprentices, and they were just obviously so full of beans about their apprenticeship, and they wanted to tell me all about it, and they were encouraging me to apply. And so I got a wee bit of advice from them and just went for it. So I think I applied in the March, and someone said, oh, why don't you just triple your chances and apply for a few in England and a few in Wales and a few in Scotland. And thank God I did, because I ended up doing video interviews for almost all of them. And if you look at the difference between the video interviews for my apprenticeship application for Wales and the one for Scotland, there's such I was obviously having a really bad day in the Scotland one, because I did not get through, and they just completely disregarded it, which was kind of hard, because then I knew that if I did get anything, I was going to have to go quite far away from home rather than just an hour along the road to Glasgow. But I mind getting an email saying, oh yeah, you've got a kind of assessment day at the BBC in Wales, and my poor mum was like, oh, here we go. So then bought flights down to Cardiff, and was super supportive and came with me that day. And I mind bricking it and being really like embarrassed when she took my picture next to the Dalek in this like kind of reception area of BBC Wales, and went in and did the kind of speed dating and met Sue for the first time and just explained all about myself. I was fresh out of school. I actually had just turned 18 when I went down to do my little speed dating interview, and I felt like it had went well, and I honestly felt like I hadn't, I couldn't have done better. Like I really tried and everything had kind of fallen in my favor, and I wasn't thinking I was going to get it, because I know how competitive they are, or they were at the time, and they still are. But I did get it, and I had to wait like 2 months for that phone call, but it was Pamela, and she said, it was weird seeing you get the one in Wales and not the one in Scotland, but we're delighted to offer it to you. And so then I up sticks and I moved to Cardiff in September. That would have been 2019.
Yeah.
And I started working as a radio apprentice. And
literally just turned 18 then. Really,
yeah, that was really scary. I moved in with a couple of the other apprentices on my kind of cohort. It was a lot. It was a lot to take in. And then, of course, I was working really early mornings. I remember getting up at 4 a.m. and going to bed at 6 p.m. And it was not the kind of social life in Cardiff as a young person that I ever thought I'd have. I've still never really had a job where it's allowed me to go out. So I'm probably like socially awkward because I haven't done any like going out. I think I did a handful of nights out in Cardiff, which is so embarrassing when you live there for 2 years. But of course, we were put into lockdown in the March 2020, and that really ended my apprenticeship, and everything changed then. And like you say, we were doing almost all our radio planning in Radio Wales over Zoom.
So So, you know, when you initially applied for the apprenticeship, was it specifically with Radio Wales, or did you go for a couple of them, or was it radio you wanted to go into?
Yeah, by far. I was so obsessed with radio at that time, probably more obsessed then than I am now. But I was just absolutely obsessed with music radio in particular. And I wasn't really bothered. I knew that if I went into the BBC and I got into BBC radio, there would be pathways to get wherever I kind of needed to go if I worked hard. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I thought that, and I didn't just turn my nose up at kind of like daily programming, like phone-ins and entertainment shows and things that are for a completely different target audience than an 18-year-old. Because I've always really loved radio, and I remember speaking to Lauren on my course, and she was doing costume, and I was just thinking, God, maybe I could have done costume. Like, that was really fun. But then, you know, I had no background in that, and all I knew was listening to the radio. So yeah, it was radio or die, really, because if I hadn't done the apprenticeship, my alternative was a university place to study modern languages. Would you believe it? I'm so glad I didn't do that, because I would have just been, oh no, I'm not joking. I would have just been graduating now. And I just don't think I would have enjoyed it. I probably would have dropped out.
that's the thing, isn't it? Because you, at that age, at 18, a lot of us are forced to go to university. Yeah. Apprenticeships now are far wider available. And I think we know we're a bit more clued up with them as well.
Yeah, so, I went to a really academic school, and it was kind of, they did tell me, and I tell this to apprentices now, you know, they told me I wouldn't make it, and they told me I wouldn't do well in the BBC, and they weren't shy of telling me that's absolutely not what we kind of encourage here, because we want our students to go to uni, because it was all about the kind of leaderboard of the school. It was a very academic and competitive school, and I was so sick of that environment by the time I left, and I thought, well, I'm just going to show you that I can do this. And so when I got the phone call, I was like, it was like the biggest up-use to my skill.
Because I remember when you came into us the first time, we always asked you for your certification and qualifications and stuff like that. And if I'm right, you did Scottish Hires, didn't you?
Yeah, which was totally made sense to me, but I did 5 Scottish Hires and I did National Fives, and nobody had heard of them in Wales, and we're just like, what is that?
No, you gave us an education, if you know what I mean. It was like, oh, what's this? But yeah, I think you were the first apprentice that had come from somewhere else, and that I dealt with myself as well. And I'd never heard of Scottish Hire, so it was like, oh, right, okay, what's this then? So literally, you came to Cardiff. I mean, how hard was it to decide where you were going to live? I mean, were you in BH for your first?
Yeah, I was in the old broadcasting house, and I actually lived quite awkwardly far away from it. And at the time, I wasn't able to drive and I didn't have a car. So I was basically using the Cardiff bus service and the Cardiff bus app at the time. And I think about a week into living in Cardiff, I could recite you every single bus route in Cardiff. I was just like, it just became my obsession of knowing how to get around, usually like in the middle of the night. And I remember my first shift going into work, the phone in, and I was awake so early that the guys were putting the advertisements in the bus shelter. And I was like, I kind of was like, oh, morning. And he was like, where are you off to, son? And I was like, well, I'm going to the BBC because it's my first day. And he was like, you'll be fine. And I was like, oh, that's exactly what I needed to hear. And I just remember it, like, I was walking around in Cardiff in the dark for so long, getting the same buses that the nurses were going to Heath Hospital. Like, oh, it was awful. It was like, I mind-sponed my mum, and she was like, is it fun? And I said, well, it's only fun when I get there.
Oh, my God. So I think, you know, you started in September 2019. Yeah. So what was the first program that you worked on? What was the early morning thing they gave you?
So it was Jason Mohammed's phone-in and Dot Davis at the time phone-in. So that airs between, God, it was 8:30 till 11 at the time, but we were usually in at 6:30. We would, plan daily stories and work out what we were going to ask the callers about. And then it was my job to deal with all the Welsh people that phoned in and get them to the right place and get them to argue with Jason and get them to share their point. And it was just honestly a lesson in phoning people early in the morning and being polite and getting them on air. And I'm still to this day can't believe I managed to get the people I did. Even within a week of, you know, being on that show, they just said, right, phone this person and find this kind of person. And it was really niche stuff. It was almost like, find me a woman with brown hair that travels on M4 every day and gets off a Neath. And it's just like, okay, give me 5 minutes.
No disrespect to you either. You probably hadn't heard of half the places they come from anyway, had you?
Oh, I remember trying to spell Penedithraeth and like really messing it up. And I was so embarrassed because I was like, oh, I wasn't just not meant to be here because I'm not Welsh and I'm blatantly not Welsh. And I remember asking my guests on the phone, you know, it's for Radio Wales. And they're like, yeah, but you're not Welsh. And I'm like, I know, but just trust me.
So then when eventually you did move down to the brand new spanking BBC in Central Square, hopefully your life became a little bit easier with the morning travel.
Well, I'd moved house after my first year. So I moved from Roath to Grangetown, and a lot of people told me not to live in Grangetown. And I think that was fair enough because Grangetown came with certain advantages and disadvantages. But I was living with a nice lady who was working from home during COVID, and we kind of did all of our housemate living together during COVID. It was a 5-minute walk to Central Square from the house, and it was really great. And that made life a lot easier. And by then I was working on mid-morning shows and afternoon shows. And I'd actually had the opportunity to go to North Wales at the tail end of my apprenticeship and work on Janice Long's show in Wrexham, which really changed my life, because the kind of opportunities that came out of knowing her producer and the opportunities that came out of just knowing Janice, they've set me up so well, and they've given me a lot of employment since. So for that, I am so thankful to Colin Patterson, who just sent me up to North Wales and said, get on with it.
Yeah, I remember you telling me, obviously you love music, and you'd said if I had a chance to work with Janice Long, that would be mean something so much to me. When she passed away, you were the first person I thought about, to be honest.
Yeah, well, actually, I remember that day so vividly, because she passed away on Christmas Day, and we found out Boxing Day, and I was back home with my family at that point, and I phoned the producer, and she said, I was just going to phone you. You were the first person I thought of. How are you doing? Mm. And I said, oh, God, how are you doing? And it was really awful, and I actually still think about her all the time and have a little cry, because to know that I helped on the very last show that she broadcast with is just like, it's such a circle of life, because she's such a big inspiration. And just yesterday I was in a school in Shetland telling people, you know, their kids are asking, what famous people did you meet? And I was like, oh, well, have you heard of Janice Long? And none of them have. But if you tell them about her, they begin to realise that being the second woman to work at Radio 1 is such a big deal. And she's so knowledgeable, and she was so funny, and she was so rude, and she'd go for a fag in the middle of a long song, and she'd swear, and she'd curse at people or other presenters that she didn't like, which I won't name. But it was just such a musical education. And even the music that I kept playlists, because I knew it would be a good idea to document my time on that show in music. And so I kept the playlist that I made every week. I used to suggest 22 songs every week, one from different decades and then a couple of Welsh ones. And I still have them all saved, and it's so nice to take myself back to that time in my life and trying to listen to what we were both listening to, me and Janice. So I think about that a lot. That was definitely the best thing to come out of that year, being an apprentice, for sure.
Yeah, because how long were you up in Wrexham for? It was long. Is it longer than a week?
Oh, I was there for 2 months in total, but I broke that up. So I was there for a month to start with, and then I went back the month before COVID struck. And then I was actually working on the show from home for, I don't know, 6 months. I used to do Wynne Evans' show in the morning and then flip over as a freelancer and do Janice's in the evening. And I would help Adam Walton, who was the producer and sometimes presenter at the time, with the show. And there were so many times, you know, where he couldn't make it, and I had to put together 3 hours of music. But I was 18 years old, and I actually produced one of Janice's shows at 18 years old, just because, you know, there was people who couldn't get in. And I remember phoning my dad and said, Dad, like, we need to make 3 hours of music for air tonight. And he was just bingo, I've always wanted to do this.
And it was Dad.
we actually made an amazing playlist, and I still have the show saved. And it wasn't Janice that presented it was Adam Walton, but he was so lovely at the end and gave me a shout out, and, you know, said, you know, this was all put together by an 18-year-old who's just joined the team. And it was such amazing. A massive privilege. I'll never forget that. It was wonderful.
So tell me where home is.
Home is Perthshire, so very rural, like much more rural than even where I'm talking to you from now. And that's about an hour north of Edinburgh. I was working out of a very rural home with a very dodgy broadband connection.
My God, yeah.
But it was still good, you know. I was still doing phone-ins. And that's when I started getting my first jobs with indies. So Janice's producer then moved to an indie company and started kind of this kind of comedy indie production company, and phones me all the time and kind of said, can I have a researcher? And, you know, they were doing a lot of pilot telly and stuff I'd never worked on before. And so they gave me my first telly credit. Like, my name was on telly in February last year, and it was great. And I actually did that, and I then picked up the role I'm in now, and I was doing that kind of in the mornings, and then doing my you know, everyday role at nighttime. And so I kind of, it took me a long time to get out of that, I have to say yes to everything, freelance mode, and get into being really comfortable with a 9 to 5, something that would pay at the end of every month. And now that I'm used to it, I'm so used to it. And I honestly don't think I could go back to freelancing, but freelancing taught me so much, but it really also burnt me out quite a lot, because at the end of the day, I was on every show on Radio Wales, and it was exhausting. And there was other freelancers who have been to Skill who were doing the same thing, and I was just tired and I needed a break, and that's why I went home in the end.
So basically, you did your, because your apprenticeship was extended by 3 months, wasn't it, because of COVID? Yeah. So you did like 15 months, if I'm right, in Cardiff. So September 2019 to December 2020. Then you did a bit of freelancing in Cardiff for a while before going back home?
Yeah, I did almost a year. So I think I was at Radio Wales for dead on 2 years. And 1 year was freelancing and 1 year was apprenticeship. And they looked very similar, except with the freelancing, there was just more weekend work, and I had really random sporadic days off, and I was pretty much always in. I remember someone coming in and being like, do you sleep here? Because you're just never away from this building. And I was like, one day I will be, and I'll never come back, because I swear, I'm so tired. But it was really fun, and I actually really enjoyed it, because I was getting to work on like football phone-ins and stuff that I was totally underqualified for, but they were desperate, so they were like, oh, we need a freelancer on, you come. And you know, it was all the same set kind of skills, and it's still skills that I use now. And it was only that I wanted to go home, and it was only that nothing else had come up, and there was things I was trying on. I was telling my mum, oh, this show might be moving to Cardiff, and she was like, if it's not happening tomorrow, just come home, because you'll be waiting forever.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? And I'm presuming, you know, you weren't that close to home. It was going to be a flight, wasn't it, or a long train journey or something. And then COVID came, we weren't allowed to travel. So maybe you've just done your time in Cardiff, you know?
Yeah, I think I had, but I'm obviously not averse to going back. I found a really great family within kind of BBC Scotland, and that's great. But I'm still in contact with the people in Wales, and I still ask them to listen to things I make, because they were such good editorial ears, better than the people I work with now. So I send a lot of things, because they understand how young and how much I didn't know when I got there. And the teams I'm working with now, they don't know that. They just assume I've been in the BBC forever, kind of raised in the faith because I was an apprentice. But but I still send them things, because their opinion means a lot to me, because they kind of raised me, and I'm so grateful to them. I really am.
Yeah. So when you were freelancing, was this mainly with the BBC, or did you work for exterior companies?
Most of the time it was with the BBC, and it was within BBC Radio Wales or BBC Radio Scotland, and that was daytime output for both of those. And sometimes I would get a contract, you know, very loose, kind of, here's 6 weeks of work, 3 days a week, which was great. Loved getting things like that. So I worked on series 18 of a Scotland comedy programme called Breaking the News. That was the first foray I ever had into comedy. And it was a fantastic way of just seeing like how other teams work and how laid back comedy was in terms of, like, you know, a million miles away from the phone-ins. And then just meeting a handful of producers in Glasgow and Edinburgh was good too. But I was working only for the BBC until I got a call from Janice Long's old producer, who had started Little Wonder, who do comedy and kind of comedians tours across Wales and across the whole of the UK. They're getting bigger and bigger every day, Little Wonder Productions. And I did a pilot radio show for them, hosted by Kerry Pritchard McLean, which was What Just Happened, and it was a kind of roundup of the year in Welsh news. So I basically did this massive document of, here's everything that happened in Wales in 2021, and it was great, and it went out on radio, and they liked it so much they picked it back up for a television piece. And it was filmed at the Barry Memo, and I didn't go down.
Yeah,
I didn't go down. I wasn't able to go at that time. I was home, and it was just too difficult logistically to get me down. And I didn't have to be there, but I did my first ever television research on that, and I did that from home. I did that from my mum's house, and got my name on telly, and it was really funny. And that was all it came to. I mean, it's not, to the best of my knowledge, it's not been recommissioned, and Kerry's got a lot of other projects in the pipeline. But that was my first kind of indie telly production credit.
So you weren't sort of put off by freelance work, are you? Because a lot of people, if they've had an apprenticeship or they've had a full-time job somewhere, to go off and be a freelancer, which a lot of apprentices do end up doing, it rocks the boat with some people. You know, it's just not their it's not their bag, if you know what I mean.
It was really hard to make the transition, but when my very last day of apprenticeship looked exactly the same as the very first day of freelancing, I was like, oh, maybe this isn't as bad. And it was really the same teams. And I could see, and I think I was one of the lucky ones in that there was a break from the apprenticeship intake during the pandemic, which meant that my apprentice role was essentially still open and I was still there. So I kind of just kept going on a freelance contract. And I kept going and I kept going, and then people would see me in the office and they'd say, are you free on Saturday? Are you free on Sunday for Owen Money's request? Are you free on this for whatever? And I would just say yes. And it was just a lesson in learning to say yes, not learning to say no, which I should have been learning at the same time. But I was saying yes to everything. And then at the same time, Pamela got back in touch with me and said, how are you doing? Have you got enough work? And I said, well, yeah, I do. I've got enough work to get, you know, through my rent payments and that kind of thing. But if you've got any other things. And she said, oh, well, you know, there's a big freelance pool in Scotland. Let me just put your name out, because if you've got a Scottish accent, they'll be happy to take you. So I said, okay. And then, yeah, within a week, I had three calls saying, yeah, we need someone for a series 18 of Breaking the News. We need someone on the morning phone-ins. Like, what can you give us? And suddenly my whole timetable flipped from Radio Wales to Radio Scotland. And I was doing, some days I was doing, you know, 3 days on the phone-in in Wales, and then had to swap and do 3 days on the phone-in in Scotland. Whoa. And that was quite tricky. And I did a lot of random shows that I was bad at. Like, we had we still have a Sunday morning religion program on Radio Scotland. And I did a lot of research on that. And God, like, my kind of introspective philosophical brain is there. And I was so used to kind of news and current affairs that I was really struggling to write these really long form interviews with really philosophical characters and have it be nice and calm for a Sunday morning. And that was a real challenge. But I did fine and I got through it, and I wouldn't be the first pick for a role in that team, and I probably wouldn't go back, but it was good. It was good experience. And then I knew that I was in safe hands then if I moved home, because I could kind of just take the train through to Glasgow and Edinburgh, and that's what I did. That's what I did. So I wasn't scared of freelancing, but I was one of the lucky ones where the opportunities were right in front of me.
Eva, tell us now where you are now, how you got there, what are you doing? Very, very far up there somewhere.
I don't even know, man. How do you go from Wales to here? Yeah, so I finished freelancing for BBC Scotland in January 2022. And in the December, I'd applied for a researcher role with BBC Radio Shetland. So that's a local output station that goes on air with them in between kind of BBC Scotland's regular scheduled programming. And we broadcast across Shetland and Orkney. So just to put it into perspective, like I did for you earlier, I'm further away from my home now than I was when I lived in Cardiff, but I'm still in Scotland. So I'm 220 miles north of Aberdeen. And then I live 2 hours south of Aberdeen, so getting home is either an hour flight to Dundee or Edinburgh, or it's a 14-hour boat that goes to Orkney and Shetland. So Shetland, I genuinely didn't know anything about it. And actually, I got to Shetland and realised the role I'd applied for was a journalism researcher rather than just the researcher jobs I was used to. And so I quickly got there and they said, right, you'll be writing and reading a bulletin on air. And I was like, oh my God, you know, this is my first on-air role. And the interview had gone really well, but a lot of the time I'd just done what I'm doing now and talked about my previous experience. But they were looking for someone younger. And at the same time, they hired me. They hired one of my best friends here who is also young and was out of, he just come out of a kind of 2-year journalism degree. And I just said yes. And I removed. And my mum was so good again. She moved me up to Shetland this time. And it was horrible. It was January. So we had one of the worst crossings that the ferry operator had seen that year. And it was hailstones for 4 days with, like, I'm not joking, 65 mile an hour winds. It was awful, like take your car door off kind of
wind. Oh my God.
And I was like, Mum, don't leave me. Like, and she said, I don't want to leave you here. But, you know, when you get into the office and you see what a tight knit team they are, and they're not all from Shetland, you actually, I felt like, okay, I'm maybe going to be quite safe here. And I totally have been, because it's a year and a half later, I'm still there. Rather than being a journalism researcher on a fixed term contract, I'm now a journalist on a permanent contract.
Oh, fantastic.
which is, you know, I never wanted to be a journalist. I used to look at the Radio Wales newsroom and think, that looks like the worst thing ever. And I remember speaking to journalism apprentices and they were just like, oh, we are so envious of your job. We wish we could speak to Welsh people on the phone. But yeah, this is actually a completely different type of journalism. And because you're working on a hyper local level, it is so friendly. It's so involved. I mean, just to give you an idea of what I do in a day, like Friday, just the maddest day. So in the morning I got my wetsuit on and I took my GoPro and my recording equipment down to the sea and got into the water with one of the local doctors who has a morning commute where he swims to work, the kilometer between his house and the local health centre here. And that's actually where I was working on that today. So that's going to be on Reporting Scotland and the telly, and it's going to be on Good Morning Scotland radio, and it'll be a digital video on the BBC website. So that just went crazy. Glasgow just decided that this was the best feature ever and they were going to use it. So I'm delighted about that because that's my first kind of Reporting Scotland telly piece, which is great. And then the very same day I drove almost as far north as Shetland as you can go to the Simmer Dim Bikers Rally, which is a rally that bikers in Shetland have at midsummer when it's light all night, because we have 24 hours of light at the moment because we just don't have darkness. Which is amazing. And they have this big bikers rally and people come from all over the world. So I went there and then I was straight back down the road to interview crime writer Val McDermid, the queen of crime, for the Shetland Noir Crime Writing Festival. And that was just my average day. Yeah, so I'll go into work and I'll write, you know, a 5-minute bulletin for lunchtime. Then I'll go out and I'll interview people. You know, it's 3 to 4 minute interviews with all kinds of people. And that goes out between 5:30 and 6 in our programme, Good Evening Shetland. And so my life has just taken a ridiculous trajectory.
Well, and is this a TV programme or a radio programme, or does it cover both?
So that is a radio program that we do every single night. So Good Evening Shetland goes out between 5:30 and 6 o'clock on the wider BBC Scotland channel. But the way that our FM transmitters are set up, that goes out to listeners in Shetland and in Orkney. And then also you can find it on a stream on BBC Sounds, like just like you would find Radio Scotland or Radio Wales. And so that's something that you can listen back to on Sounds every day. So we have that. And then we have a 5-minute bulletin at lunchtime at 12:30. And then in the winter between October and March, we have programs off the back of our news bulletins. So that's from 6 o'clock till 7 o'clock, and that's documentaries and local people coming in to do music programs and all different kinds of output. So that's why I really took the job, because I was aware that Radio Shetland had that kind of hour-long gap in the winter to fill with individual documentaries from each of the staff there or music programs. So just this year, actually last year, I had my first documentary, hour-long, self-produced, self-made, go out on national radio, and it was so rewarding. It was amazing. So last year Shetland hosted its first ever Pride Festival, and it's about to happen next weekend, the second year. But I made an hour-long feature on the whole of the Pride weekend, and it was just such a mad week. I remember just not sleeping, but I made a really lovely colourful piece with the founder of Shetland Pride, and it's an hour-long documentary that I really was delighted that I'd managed to produce an hour-long bit of content. Like, that kind of freedom to have, you just go make whatever you want, just doesn't come often in the BBC. And so my manager was just, I couldn't believe it when he just said, you just go and make that. And I would never have got that as a freelancer at Radio Wales or Radio Scotland. So I totally feel like to get an opportunity like that, you have to go smaller rather than go bigger. I think a lot of people will race to London and think that'll give me a big opportunity. But I think it's the opposite way around. If you go somewhere small, you're a small team, but you're responsible for a lot of output. You'll suddenly be in charge of hours of output that you've got to meet yourself. I've done a lot of documentaries, and actually this went out in March. I made probably the thing I'm most proud of to date. I made an hour-long documentary about the Aurora Borealis in Shetland, and how people here spend almost their whole life hunting the Aurora, and how it's such a spectacle up here. Obviously we're very lucky, we get to see the Aurora a lot, and I spoke to locals, people, kind of scientists, physics teachers. I spoke to people who are concerned with tourism and folklore and this kind of thing to do with the Northern Lights, and I'm so proud of it, and I really loved it. It was the first documentary where I had my voice in it all the time, and I was kind of the narrator rather than a guest being the narrator. And it meant a lot for me to have that in my kind of repertoire, because now having shown I can do that, my manager's given me a lot of freedom to do a lot of mad stuff, so that will come in the winter.
It's fantastic. It just seems like you're getting so many opportunities. It's great to hear that people don't have to go to London either, do you know what I mean, or a capital city or something, you know. So you're going to be there then for a while, yeah? You sound really happy, and it's you made a good choice. And
I think, you know, I did make a good choice, yeah. I have actually been offered other jobs, just some freelance stuff and some more permanent stuff, and some when people, you know, maybe the job doesn't actually happen in the end, but they've offered it to me. And I sometimes bring it up with my manager, and it puts the fear you've got into it. He always asks when I'm going to leave. I think he thinks, just because I've jumped around the BBC quite a lot already in my relatively short BBC life, that I'm just going to hop, skip and jump away from Shetland. But that's not really the case, because the amount of freedom I get here, I just know would take years to get in Glasgow. So yeah. What I'm just going to keep doing is making the stuff up here that I really enjoy and just pitch it to other places, because already some of the stuff that I've made has appeared on wider BBC Scotland programmes, and, you know, some of the stuff would in the future hopefully get to Radio 4, or might get to, you know, the World Service. And there's so many niche things about Shetland that are quite attractive to the bigger network stations, and with a bit of luck and with a lot of work, you know, you can maybe get your little tiny feature you've made out on a bigger service.
So you can honestly say that the last 4 years have been quite peaks and troughs, whirlwinds. You've had a lot of experiences, you know.
Yeah, I'm so grateful, because, you know, even being raised as a kind of apprentice in the BBC, as I like to phrase it, it gives you a lot of appreciation for many different parts of the BBC. I'm working with a lot of people who have only ever worked in Shetland, and their mindset about what the BBC stands for is very different from mine.
Yeah.
And they're a bit older than me, and they maybe don't see that the BBC has so many opportunities for young people. And also, they'll maybe ask for stuff that I think is really cheeky to ask for the BBC. And it's just funny to see how different people work. And the BBC's changed a lot. And I often get people saying, oh, maybe you already know this because you've worked somewhere else. And 9 times out of 10, I don't. But there's so many things that, you know, were totally transferable. I think back on a lot of my BBC life, and I think, yeah, lockdown was actually a lot harder than I maybe thought at the time. I think I had quite a big bearing just working on Zoom. That really took a toll.
Yeah.
And it's not like I ever didn't enjoy what I was doing, but after a while I was so exhausted that I just didn't really think about what I was doing. I was just doing it in like default mode, and I'm not doing that here. I mean, here I've got so much freedom, and, you know, I've got a staff role, which if you'd asked me when I was 18 at Skill, do you think you'll have a staff role, I would have said no, not until I was about 35. But here we are, I've just turned 22 and I'm staff journalist, and now the power is in my hands to say, you know, when I'm going to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I know you've been giving advice to new apprentices as well, haven't you? You've been on forums and stuff like that.
Yeah, I get calls and I get so many Twitter messages from people who say, oh, you were an apprentice. And it's hard as well, because a lot of them are journalism apprentices and they come to me because I'm a journalist now, but I was never trained in journalism and I don't have any qualifications in journalism, and I'm the only one in my office without any qualifications in that. But, you know, I have exactly the same amount of experience as anybody else, just because the apprenticeships are so good. But even now, we were just saying that they're so much better. You come out with a permanent role and you've got loads of experience, you get so many opportunities, and you get to move around the country a bit more in the Scotland apprenticeships now. And I'm often dealing with very ambitious young applicants or young apprentices who are just finishing their schemes, and giving advice to people who think a lot of themselves, and rightly so. But sometimes you need to remind them that, you know, I spent 2 years kind of freelancing in lockdown, and it can be difficult. So sometimes it's taking them down a peg, and sometimes it's telling them, well, you know, maybe look outside of your hometown of Cardiff, say, and see if there's anything outside of that, because you never know where your best opportunity on air is going to come from. And it could be, you know, Orkney or Shetland, or it could be Wales, it could be Guernsey, you know, it doesn't matter. The BBC's everywhere.
Listen, I have loved catching up with you. We could do another hour, but I think it would be a nightmare to edit.
I know, but it's been a joy. It's so nice to reflect on where I am. It gives me a lot of food for thought as well.
Okay, lovely catching up with you. And I'll see you in Shetland, yeah?
Yeah, come to Shetland. Why not? Anybody who's listening, come to Shetland. And to all the people who are working at Skill at the moment, and everybody who's going through Skill and their courses, best of luck. And I hope everything kind of comes your way, because I'm sure it will.
Oh, thanks, Eva. And you've been a great ambassador, and we're all really proud of you and what you've done, you know.
Oh, thank you. It does seem like a lot of people in Wales kind of raised me, and I'm very in debt to all of you. So if I can even offer anybody advice, then just get in touch.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.